Hey everybody, you're listening to one of the top 10 podcasts of the year today. We'll go to it in a second, but I just wanted to say one more time, hope you're enjoying the holidays so far, hope everyone's healthy, and I can't wait to hit the ground hardcore in 2024, and I'll see you there.
Attention is the number one asset.
I tell a lot of people, like, what's the worst thing that's gonna happen? The job's gonna say no? Well, then you move on. What's gonna be the worst thing that happens? That boy or girl says no, they don't want to go on a date with you? What's the worst thing that's gonna happen? You're gonna make 50 videos, nobody watches, and you're gonna do something else? Like, people create this fear of judgment that doesn't exist.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Gary V Audio Experience. Been really trying to be selective and creative with our guests. I think we've got a really good one for you today. We're gonna yap, hopefully inspire, and most of all, get you to think and feel. And so I'm gonna allow my guest to introduce himself, tell you who he is, and 2 minutes about him, and then I'm gonna dig right into it. So Dia, I'm excited you're on the show. How are you?
Hey, Gary, I'm great, man. Thanks for having me on, man. It's truly an honor to get to meet you. I'm sure you hear that a lot, but you're a trailblazer. And look, man, Gary, Damon West here, man. And I'm telling you, I got out of prison about 7.5 years ago. And since then, I've been out there sharing my message, the story of the coffee bean, which we're going to talk about today. And that message has caught fire all over the world, brother. And I appreciate you letting me come on your podcast today to share this message with your audience, because I truly think we're going to enrich the lives of millions of people today.
So let's get right into it. Tell everybody, you know, 2-3 minutes on you. Like, how'd you grow up? Let's go way back. Like, where were you born? What kind of kid were you? And then let's get into the meat of the story and then get into the meat of the message.
Yeah, man, I grew up in this little town called Port Arthur, Texas. Port Arthur's down by Louisiana and Texas on the Gulf Coast. Came from a great family. Had everything going for me in life. Good athlete. Great athlete, actually. I got a scholarship to play Division I college quarterback, University of North Texas. Got injured in college and went off to work in different jobs, like worked in Congress, worked for a guy running for president, worked on Wall Street. It was there at that job as a broker in 2004 that I was introduced to meth for the first time. Mm. And it took about 18 months from the introduction of meth into my system to lose it all, to give it all away, Gary, because that's what addicts do. We give things away, man. I gave up my job, my home, my car, my savings account, my family, my tethering to God. And I went from working on Wall Street to living on the streets of Dallas, Gary. And that's when I became a criminal. I was a meth addict and I was the ringleader of a bunch of other meth addicts breaking into people's homes. And that is a good place for us to launch and start this story today.
Actually, before we do that, brother, because I think, you know, the modern technology allows people, obviously that's a very intriguing starting point. I think a lot of people can pause their podcast, Google your name, and probably see you talk about that part. I actually, especially knowing this audience, actually want to double click into something that just caught my attention.
Go.
Talk to me about, when did you think that you were going to be, or when did you realize that you were a very talented athlete? And did you at any point think you were going to be a professional athlete? Or how much did you being a good athlete define who you were? You know, I'm in the athlete business with Vayner Sports. Yeah. I know exactly what part of the country you grew up in. That Friday, you know, Friday Night Lights was a very successful sitcom. So I think a lot of people listening, yeah, not in the sports business, can probably have a good sense of what being the star quarterback of a high school team in that part of the country means. I get the luxury of seeing you right now. I know a lot of people are listening. Some will watch videos, but I can see you. So I can tell that you were clearly also a handsome star quarterback as a senior in high school. I want to go into identifying as something at a young age and how big of a vulnerability that could be. So I just yapped a lot. Let's break this down. When did you realize you were good at sports?
Gary, great questions, and you're getting right to the heart of it. When I first realized I was really good at sports, I was about 11 or 12 years old. God blessed me with a cannon for a right arm. and you hit the nail on the head, man. This is Texas, man.
Yeah.
Friday Night Lights, Texas high school football, that stuff is a religion down here where I live, yeah, man. And I was the man. I was a 3-year starting quarterback for a 5A school. Biggest division there was, blue chip. Back then, blue chip was like the real big thing to be. It was like they have the star system now.
Yeah, of course.
But and so being a quarterback was everything to me. It's how I identified in life. And because I was such a good athlete, I got away with a lot of things in life, Gary.
Yeah.
A lot of the rules didn't apply. Sorry.
Yeah.
A lot of the rules didn't apply to me, Gary. I was able to skate by with things. My behavior never really got checked. And I'm not blaming anybody for that, but that's just
what. Yeah, you're not blaming the school, you're not blaming your parents.
No, absolutely not the coaches, nobody. That's
but you know what? But you know what? In hindsight, being the byproduct of that, let's just jump because I want to make this very valuable. For the parents that are listening at home right now who either have a straight A student and that's their religion, who have a great, you know, everyone, the Alcaraz match just happened, so tennis is on a lot of people's mind, have a great tennis player and that's their religion, football, you know, whatever it is, how much do you now realize that creating boundaries is obnoxiously healthy?
Oh, it's incredibly healthy. And here's what I realized about that now, and I didn't pick up on this when I was a late teenager or in my 20s.
Well, because you were the beneficiary of it. At the time, you were pumped that you could skip class or you could drink with your buddies or whatever the fuck you're about to say. But now you understand, like, nobody holding you accountable led to you subconsciously and then consciously realizing you could get away with shit.
Oh, yeah. And it's, Gary, even more than just cutting class. I mean, I got pulled over drunk. I got all kinds of things happened to me that would have put somebody in the criminal justice system long before I went in there when I was 33 years old, man. But because I was the quarterback, because I could throw a football, you know, my identity, Gary, was wrapped up in being a college football player. And the danger about this, and I'm talking to all the parents and even young people out there, is that when you attach your identity into something external, something you can attach to, you're setting yourself up for an enormous failure, Gary. You know this, man. You can't attach yourself to a job, your athletic ability, the car
Brother,
you drive.
You were so kind to me before we got on camera and then immediately repeated it. Like, when I tell you that I have no feelings towards my professional success, you'd be baffled. I'm on the other side of the fence on this. I don't give a shit that I'm Gary Vee. I don't give a shit that I'm good at making money as an entrepreneur. I think none of that means anything, and no one should treat me in any shape or form different because I have a lot of followers or I'm good at making money or I say nice things. I just know and have known since I was 10. This is why I was a bad student. I was a bad student because I didn't feel attached to needing to get A's and B's. I love that you're going down this path. This is why I'm double clicking on this. Like, I know that you're about to say a bunch of great shit, but I also assume, because you've had a lot of success, that we can see a lot of that shit on the internet. Because, like, it's the same with me. You can see my core principles out there every day. What we're talking about, you and I, right now, is actually going to change the course of 5 or 6 people's lives out of the 100,000s that are listening right now or over the course of the next couple of years. Because it's those early days of attaching to something. It's not just the star quarterback. This is why I'm so scared of school. Being an Ivy League student, those kids are failing left and right every day as well in their 20s and 30s because all they wanted to be was a straight A student, go to Ivy League, and then you're 22 and now what?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're wise, Gary, in your life to not attach yourself to anything that's going on in the world that you've created with your successes because, man, that's not what it's about. Look, Gary, I have this healthy perspective now on what a bad day looks like. And I think that we all have perspective on what a bad day looks like. But when we're wrapped up in this world, we don't even live in a reality. When we're attached to this fake identity that could be coming from social media, could be coming from the sports we play. And look, I speak to college football teams all over America. I've met a lot of your players, man. You've got some great guys that you represent. And I think that the danger of that is that when you attach yourself to something external, you set yourself up for an enormous failure. In my life today, Gary, every day that I wake up and my feet don't hit the cold concrete floor of a prison cell, I'm winning. I'm going to have a good day. And it doesn't matter if I'm out there speaking on some stage or writing books or doing whatever. I'm out there making a positive impact. But I didn't understand that, Gary, when I was in the middle of it, man. And when I'm going through this living in Texas, everything is available to me that I want to do. But on September 21st, 1996, Gary, the entire world changed for me. I call this a fork in the road in life. And life's about these fork in the road days, these very pivotal days where you get knocked down, you get back up, you dust yourself off, but you're going to make a decision at the fork in the road. You're either going to make the right choice and go the right way or the wrong choice and go down the wrong direction. September 21st, 96, Gary, we're playing against Texas A&M. It's a beautiful Saturday in College Station, Texas. I'm 20. I'm the starting quarterback for a Division I team at 20 years old, Gary. Driving my team down the field.
Just for fun, who was the opposing quarterback?
I don't remember who the opposing quarterback is. I can tell you who the opposing linebackers were. Keith Mitchell and Dat Nguyen.
Yeah.
And these are, yeah.
Nguyen had Dat a great
Nguyen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I played against – that was the game that I played against Dat Nguyen. In fact, Dat tackled me on a couple plays before this. Third play of this game, Gary, I'm driving my team down the field against the Aggies in College Station, packed house, beautiful Saturday afternoon. Yeah. And what little boy growing up in Texas doesn't either want to play for these guys or against these guys, right? And there I am, man, driving my team down the field. Third play of the game, I'm down on the ground. I don't get back up. It's a career-ending injury. I separate my shoulder that day, and I never play college football again. And when I get up to this fork in the road in life at 20 years old and football is gone, my identity was gone with it. And Gary,
talk it through. For a lot of people listening, a lot of sports fans, a separated shoulder in 96 is different than it is today, first of all, modern medicine. But second of all, I assume that means on your right shoulder, your throwing arm, or, and what, it just didn't heal well? Like, or did you not rehab properly? Break it down for me.
Yeah, here's what happened. So I separated my shoulder, and my dad was a sports writer for 50 years down in Port Arthur, Texas. Jimmy Johnson is also from Port Arthur, Texas. My dad and Jimmy are best friends. And so Jimmy sent me to the NFL quarterback surgeon, a guy named Dr. Vandermeer in Dallas, Texas. And Vandermeer goes in. They cut my collarbone out, the distal clavicle, because it's popped through. It's got a third-degree separation. And I start healing and coming back in the spring in the offseason. And then in June of the next year, I cut my Achilles tendon in half. So I never got to play college football again, Gary. That game against Texas A&M, I thought I could make a comeback. And I was coming back in the quarterback room in the spring. But the next summer, I severed my Achilles tendon in half.
And did that mentally, again, as you know, even in the mid-90s, one could conceivably come back to that? Or are you telling me, after all the work you put in, right, you're in the QB room, you're 20, you're staying away from the fun, you're focused, it was that Achilles that was like, fuck this?
You know, I'd like to be able to say I stayed away from the fun and I was focused. But honestly, man, in my story, and in my autobiography talks about this, the change agent, I talk about it in there a lot. I was a wild guy back in college, Gary. I partied a lot. I was in a fraternity. I did the fraternity thing when I was in there.
Yeah.
And when that happened, it broke me, man. I was done with trying to – because the rehab to come back from Achilles injury, it just seemed like a path too steep for me.
And you were just like, fuck it, I'm just going to be a college kid and have fun. I'm going to make money.
But the good news is that the coach kept me on scholarship, man. He didn't have – I ran into – Gary, the other day I run into my old – college coach in the airport, a guy named Daryl Dickey. He used to be the offensive coordinator at Texas A&M, and now he's he's an analyst at University of Georgia. He runs into me at the airport, man. I take a picture with this guy. He's like my hero because this guy keeps me on scholarship for the next 2 years. He didn't have to. That's a valuable scholarship for a school like North Texas, man. We're playing against some of the biggest guys in the country, Alabama, LSU, all these schools, and he keeps one of those 85 scholarships for me who lives a less than desirable life. But he understands that if he cuts me loose, that there's no telling what happens to Damon West back in 1997 or 1998. So he keeps me on scholarship until I graduate. And I'm kind of a pitiful person at that point. I've got a lot of talent. Obviously, God blessed me with the ability to talk to people and get out there and get good jobs. Like I said, I worked in the United States Congress after college. I worked for a guy running for president of the United States, raising money. I was a political fundraiser, raising money all over America.
You not only had a cannon right arm, you also had gift of gab and charisma, which was good for a lot of fun, but was also good in those early 20s and that transition to set you up for opportunities, because that is a massively God-given talent. Absolutely. By the way, for all the kids that are listening right now, your charisma and ability to talk is a monster, monster talent. And sometimes you guys and girls downplay that. Don't. Obviously, you've got to back it up with a steak to that sizzle. But it is, do not downplay charisma. It's no different than being born super funny, super attractive, super motivated, super athletic. It is one of the other pillars of God-given talent, one that society does not talk enough about. Charisma is a big deal.
Yeah, and it's a muscle you can work too, by the way, Gary. You can
100%.
You can get better at it. And look, just a little side note, man. I talk to people all the time. They're like, hey, man, I want to be more outgoing, but I have this fear of confrontation or this fear to get out and talk to people. Listen, I do things I'm afraid of so I can do things I'm afraid of.
Of course.
The more you address these fears and deal with that, especially speaking to people and being out front and outspoken – the better you get at it. But well, I was born with that though, Gary.
Yes, you were born with that gift, but you also lived a life that got you to places of adversity, which then put things into perspective. I tell a lot of people, like, what's the worst thing that's gonna happen? The job's gonna say no? Well, then you move on. What's gonna be the worst thing that happens? That boy or girl says no, they don't want to go on a date with you? What's the worst thing that's gonna happen? You're gonna make 50 videos, nobody watches, and you're gonna do something else? Like, people create this fear of judgment that doesn't exist.
It's in their head.
100%.
It's all in your head. And that voice in your head is usually fear, Gary. A lot of times it's fear. I don't listen to myself, Gary. I talk to myself. I used to listen to myself. But I went down some poor, pitiful roads because I listened to myself. But, you know, Gary, yeah, you're right. I was blessed with the ability to talk to people. And that was something that got me into a lot of doors. Like I said, you know, United States Congress, worked for a guy running for president, Wall Street. Back in 2004, I was back in Dallas training to be a stockbroker for UBS, one of the biggest banks in the world. But it was at that job as a stockbroker in 2004, Gary, that my life and the lives of a lot of other innocent people would forever be changed. And look,
Before you go there, before we go into how meth got into the system and all that you set us up with, and this is so damn important, big moment in the podcast, was your decision to go to Wall Street 2004, 96, you were 20, so you're 28 at this point or so?
2004, yeah, 28.
Was it now, hey, I want to make as much money as possible and Wall Street's a thing?
You nailed it, dude. The vices, man. I wanted to party. I wanted something that would support a lifestyle of partying, hanging out, making money. I mean, at that age, Gary, I didn't understand the important things in life. One of the reasons why I like your content, I'm going to back up a little bit and talk about something I've learned from you, is you went an entirely different path. You realized by the time you were young that you were meant to do something bigger. You took your dad's wine business and you blew it up. You were doing things in your 20s that now in my 40s, I'm able to start making those roads. But I was late to the game, Gary. I was late to the game because I got distracted.
Yeah, the good news is, look, and by the way, for all the kids listening home, I would argue I went a little too far because at 47, 48 years old, there's certain things I didn't develop. I probably didn't get enough fun out of the system. Like, listen, there's a great Russian saying that translates to everything's at its best when it's balanced, right?
Yeah.
And I think to your point, I was on one extreme where, like, listen, I'm thrilled and pumped with every aspect of my life, knock on wood. And one of those is why? The question always becomes why? Why did you want to party and things? You know, I always think, like, first of all, I think that's incredibly normal. I think anybody of the age of 15 to 30 has some percentage of them, you know, some is 10%, some is 100% that wants to hook up, that wants to party, that wants to be popular. Like that's normal human behavior. But when you start going through the path, unfortunately, too many people want to do it because they don't have self-confidence and they don't love themselves. And they need that drug of others liking them and all those vices. And then for me, I think I went a little bit too far. Like I'm proud to say this, and I think people that go to VCon or really know me, like I think I love my parents like probably a little bit too much, right? And so for me, I was obsessed with, I had a sense that I had a talent as well. And I was gonna milk that in my 20s to do big for my parents, because I always was very grateful that they raised me well and took me out of the Soviet Union to America. And I've been always grateful, always grateful. And so that's kind of how my story played out. But I think the balance of the two, as people are listening, I don't want them to overcorrect into my direction, because I think, you know, it would have been okay in my 20s to go on a vacation for a week. Like that would have been okay. Everything would have been still fine. And I think to your point, like, You can have fun, but you can grow up. The best part is 40s is still young. I'm pumped that you have your whole life in front of you. You know, all of a sudden when you're 80, that window of 15 to 28 or to 35 or whatever window you're about to explain us, that's going to be a small blimp. Right now, it's still a big percentage of your life. This is what I want. I want people to get excited in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s to realize when you're 90, 15 years was a small blimp. You're on that path now.
Absolutely. And it's never too late. It's never too late to turn around. Like I was listening to one of your podcasts the other day, and you were talking to the other guy you were talking to about, you know, the stuff you're even doing now. You're looking forward to the stuff you're doing 40 years from now. You know,
bro, I'm in such a weird place. I know we're bouncing around here, but like, this is going to get you pumped. And I think this will bring value. This is why I'm jumping in. I kind of weirdly make pretend I've done nothing. Like, that's how I talk to myself.
I love it, man. I do the same thing. It's called the rookie mindset.
Like, I'm kind of like, okay, cool, but like, not really. Like, fuck it. It's all gone. Today's day one, and like, let's go fucking crush. Anyway, I want to actually hear, because this is sexy now. Like, this is fun for people that like a little, you know, Hollywood stuff. Like, okay, cool. You're 28. I'm kind of into this story, so I want to get back to it. You're 28. You're starting to train for it. What happens? You meet the wrong guy? Is that what ends up happening?
So,
were you the wrong guy?
No, sometimes you hang out with the wrong crowd long enough, you become the wrong crowd, right?
Yeah, you are the wrong crowd.
That's going to happen soon in the story. But you nailed it in several different points, because you said, you know, about what happened in college. I couldn't live life on life's terms, Gary. And that's one of the hallmarks of being an addict, right? But when you do something like I did, and you start getting into all these different drugs and alcohol a lot, and you're an addict, that's a dangerous game you're playing, because now you become an addict and you're in your addiction. And in 2004, I was in my addiction. I partied. Cocaine was my drug of choice back then. But it was one day at work in 2004. I'm passed out of sleep. This other stockbroker comes up. He sees me sleeping and he wakes me up. He's visibly shaken. And he's like, Damon, wake up. He said, you can't sleep on this job. He said, dude, the stock markets are open. You're messing with people's money. They're gonna fire you. He said, come on down to the parking garage. I've got something that'll pick you up. So I get up out of my desk. I follow this guy down to the parking garage. It was a nice little sports car. I believe we're going to do a little blow. But when we get into the car, he hands me this glass pipe with these crystal rocks in it. Gary, I've never seen a glass pipe before. I'm like, man, what is that? And he's like, Damon, just relax. He said, it's crystal meth. He said, you're going to love this stuff. Truer words have never been spoken, Gary. I fell in love with crystal meth. It was the most evil, most destructive, most addictive drug I've ever put in my body, man. I smoked it one time and I was instantly hooked, just like that. And I gave everything away for that drug, because Gary, that's what addicts do. Addicts give things away. Addicts give up their goals to meet their behaviors. Yeah. Now, and when I'm talking about addiction there, for everybody listening, I'm not just talking about drugs and alcohol. That's the obvious addiction we talk about. Addicted to anything, food, money, clothing, shopping, sex, the internet, social media, whatever it is you're addicted to, if it takes you away from the most important things in life, you give away your goals to get there. But, you know, so when I started giving away everything, I gave away my job first, then it was my car.
How fast? I want to get context.
In 18 months, I was living on the streets of Dallas, homeless, without a dime in my neck.
That I heard earlier. Take it back. You go in the pipe that day. Do you do crystal meth the next day with that dude?
Oh, I was up for 4 days the first time I did it. I mean, I was up. I mean, I was doing it every day after that. And here's the deal, Gary.
How quickly did you lose that job because of it? Do you remember?
About a month. Here's why I lost the job too. Because whenever I get introduced to meth, I'm in the middle of studying for my Series 7 and my Series 63, my entrance exams to being a broker.
Yep.
Man, there's no more studying that goes on. I fail my Series 7 and my Series 63. They bring me in the office, and the guy that hired me, a guy named Charlie Eldemeyer, a family friend of my dad's, he brought me in. He's like, Damon, is everything okay? I'm like, and I'm high as a kite. I'm like, yeah, man, everything's great, Charlie. He said, well, you failed your exams. He said, you're fired. He said, there's nothing I can do for you, Damon. And they walked me out of the office. Gary, I left that day. I got into my car and I called the guy up. I said, I need your dealer, because I just got off early today. I looked at it as getting off early, man. I went and got high again, Gary.
Brother, let me ask you a question, because I think this is a common thing. You know, I just listened carefully there. I heard some of the stuff, you know, Congress, somebody ran for president. Correct me if I'm wrong. Given the religion of sports in this part of the country, which I love because I'm addicted to sports. So I need to be, you know, the New York Jets are going to put me into ruins. It sounds like your dad was able to have a lot of nice relationships that he earned over his life, that he was able to really set you up with some, and maybe it's your mom. Like, I don't know. Like, it sounds like your family was able to create some door opening. Not only was your gift of gab there, but it also, like, talk to me about the process of like taking your parents for granted with entitlement and when you're an addict.
Total entitlement, Gary. And I mean, look, let's call it for what it is. I was a privileged guy, man. I was one of those privileged people that you could ever meet, man. I had everything in my path waiting for me. There's a lot of different ways to grow up in America, Gary. And I had one of the most privileged ways to grow up. We weren't rich or anything like that. We were middle class, but man.
But the relationships were there.
The relationships. Yeah. And the relationships are everything in life, Gary. You talk about this. I talk about this with everybody. They're everything in life. My dad had built up relationships through all those years in sports, man. And, and look, being around sports, Gary, I'm a sports nut too. We learn a lot of lessons in sports and life. Sports teaches us how to win, how to lose, how to be part of a team.
It's why I'm petrified of eighth place trophies. If we eliminate the losing and how to handle it, we get kids that are scared of everything.
But Gary, and we're going to get into this in the story, sports didn't just teach me those kind of lessons. Man, my dad was the first sports writer in Southeast Texas to put black athletes on the front page of sports pages. 1971, first time it ever happened. It was a black running back from Lincoln High School named Joe Washington Jr. Went on to play for the Redskins, went on to play for the Colts. Yeah, little Joe. When my dad puts Little Joe on the cover of the sports page in 1971, people down in Southeast Texas lost their minds over that. They broke his windows. They slit his tires. They sent hate mail to him. But when I was a little boy, I was like 8 years old, my dad goes up in the attic one day. He comes down with this box with all these envelopes, these letters. It's all the hate mail. And he sat me down as a kid that day, and he made me read every letter of hate mail, every nasty negative word that people said about my father and my mother. Because my dad puts a black guy on the cover of the sports page. But you know what my dad told me back then? He said, Damon, I want you to see what it looks like to take a stand and do the right thing. Because he said, sometimes taking a stand and doing the right thing, it means you're going to stand alone. But he said, it's always okay.
Do you think that your parents, and again, they sound so wonderful, so this will be hard, but I'm desperate to bring value. And I see this a lot. And honestly, I think it's a challenge for me. Do you think it's easier to kind of do the right things in the world than necessarily do the right things for your children because you love them so much, so you give them inches and miles that you don't give to others?
Yeah, I think that Gary, I'll tell you from what I see a lot. People reach out to me a lot because I'm a very visible person now and people know that I'm in recovery. I get a lot of messages from parents whose kids are suffering from addiction issues or incarceration. And I have to tell these parents the same thing every time. Look, I'll talk to your son, your daughter. I believe that's one of the reasons why I got out of prison. I'll do that kind of service work all day long. I'll talk to anybody that reaches out to me. But I may be here to talk to you because you as the parent, you are exhibiting addictive behavior too. You've become an addict. You're addicted to fixing somebody you can't fix. And when parents become the addict because they're addicted to fixing their kid, it reminds me of my parents. My parents, they would do anything to help me out. But sometimes doing those things to help out a young person is not the best thing for them. You become an enabler in the process. And I think that's where you're going with that. My parents.
That's exactly where I'm going. I fear, by the way, this is why I wrote my last book to talk about candor. I hate conflict with people I love, which bleeds into employees, and I'm an enabler. You know, people love me, but the reality is I can enable bad behavior because if I love you, Gary V, the public figure, is dominant because I'm just talking to the world. So I can draw those lines in the sand and I can talk about these things. But as it gets closer to, from an acquaintance to a friend, from a friend to a good friend, from a good friend to a great friend, to a best friend, to family, it gets harder for me. And I'm so empathetic that I think everyone listening right now can associate with what we're saying now, which is it's a lot harder when it hits at home. And with a child, there's nothing you love more than that. It's just the way it is.
Absolutely. And it's, I think that, like I said, one of the reasons why I even got out in the first place is to be able to have these difficult conversations, because it goes back to almost what you're saying about the eighth place trophies. We are setting up an entire generation for failure when we don't allow people how to lose and learn tough lessons in life. But here's the trick. You can also lose and learn those tough lessons in life. You're a Gen X guy. I'm a Gen X guy, man. We grew up in a generation where, and it's real popular on social media right now. Everybody's tagging that and hashtagging Gen X and all that. But I mean, look, we grew up in a time where you could still lose and you still had to communicate with people back when we grew up, Gary. You didn't have phones. If you wanted to say something to somebody, you had to talk to them in your face. You had to have a little bit of human interaction. And right now, antisocial behavior is kind of like the norm of what we're going to in this country. And it needs to come back to where people are communicating with each other in person. We had the benefit of that. But I'm saying that to say this. You can have all those things going for you in life. And I certainly did. I had everything going for me in life, but you can still go down that wrong road. It's like my dad told me with those letters I was reading. He said, sometimes in life, you're going to have to take a stand. That's why I want you to read these letters. He said, it's sometimes in life, you're going to have to stand alone. But he said, it's always okay to stand alone as long as you're standing on the right side of history. So it wasn't like I was raised by people who didn't have a conscience of what was going on. My parents were in the middle of the civil rights movement in the deep South, man. They understood. They got it. My dad, he explained sports to me at a young age. He said, Damon, before there was MLK, there was Jackie Robinson. Before you integrated lunchrooms in the American South, you integrated locker rooms.
Of course.
You know? He said sports has the power to bring people together like nothing else can. And that's what sports does do.
It's why I've always associated with it. I think it's one of the great comps to real life, and it's why I'm passionate about it. My brother, I know we bounced around a ton, and I know that might have gotten us off track in some places. In the last 5 minutes that we have here together, what have we not touched on that you want to get to in this story or a point that you feel will bring value to the listener?
Let's go. July 30th, 2008, almost exactly 15 years from recording this episode. I'm on the couch that day. I've got my meth dealer sitting next to me. And I'm telling this guy, his name is Tex, my dope dealer. And I'm like, Tex, you got to get out of here, man. The cops are closing in on me. The end is near. And just about that time, the window on my right blows out and shatters. And it's a flashbang grenade, Gary. It's going across my living room floor. The thing blows up in my face. And when I came to, when I can see and hear again, there's a cop standing over me in full SWAT riot gear, man. His boot is on my chest. The barrel of assault rifle is digging in my eye socket. And he's screaming at me, don't move, don't move. And I'm like, man, don't worry, don't worry. And one of the cops came in screaming, we got him. We got the Uptown Burglar. Gary, I went from being a star college athlete to this guy known as the Uptown Burglar. They took me to Dallas County Jail that day. They processed me in. I spent the next 10 months in county jail waiting for my day in court. And on May 18th, 2009, I stood in front of a jury that sentenced me to 65 years in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. A life sentence in prison, Gary. And right after the trial was over, my mom and my dad are talking to me. And my mom has this one last visit with me, Gary. Epic stuff. And she's like, Damon, you can't go off and become someone we don't recognize. She said, you owe Texas the debt of 65 years. You got to go and pay that debt. You did everything they said you did. But here's the debt you got to pay to us. When you go to prison, you will not get in one of these white hate groups, one of these Aryan Brotherhood type gangs. You weren't raised to be like that. You weren't raised to be a racist. And she said, you come back as the man we raised, Damon, or don't come back at all. Gary, I'm floored, man. I don't know how I'm going to do this. But on the road, waiting for the bus to come get me. I'm 2 months. I've got to wait for the prison bus to come get me. I meet this guy in Dallas County Jail, this older black man, this Muslim guy named Mr. Jackson. And Mr. Jackson shares with me exactly how I'm going to do it. He said, imagine prison as a pot of warm water. He said, you have three choices how to respond in this pot of warm water called life. You can be like the carrot that turns soft and mushy and weak, or an egg, which becomes hard, mad and mean. You know, the carrot goes in hard, but becomes soft. The egg goes in with a soft liquid inside. It's hard, but the heart becomes hardened. He said, or you could be like a coffee bean, because a coffee bean changes the pot of warm water into a pot of coffee. He said, the coffee bean is the only thing that will change the water because it is a change agent. And the last words this guy said to me before the prison bus is coming to pick me up, he looks at me, he says, West, be a coffee bean. And Gary, I remember how I felt when he told me that. Man, I could get that. Man, I could understand I had three choices in this life. And I go to prison, Gary. It's a baptism by fire. Man, the first 2 months of prison are spent fighting my butt off, man. And I end up sports again, Gary. I end up on the rec yard earning respect out there with those guys playing basketball with them. And so when the violence was finally over, the threat to my physical safety was gone, I got to work on myself. I became that coffee bean. And 7 years later, the parole board in Texas comes to visit me. And the lady from parole interviews me in 2015. She says, Mr. West, we don't see a lot of people like you come through the system. Kind of the same thing we've been talking about, Gary. She said, you had it all. Every advantage, every privilege, every opportunity. She said, you're the definition of a privileged person. She said, but you didn't just change yourself when you came to this prison. You changed the entire prison around you. She said, so I have one question for you today. She said, if you could be remembered for being anything in life, anything at all, she said, tell me what that would be in just one word. Go. Hey, Gary, I breathed out and I relaxed. That's an easy question for a coffee bean. I fired her answer back at her, and I was like, ma'am, useful. I just want to be useful. You know, Gary, I think everybody wants to be useful, you know?
Yes, that's right.
And I told her, I said, I just want to be useful, ma'am. And I could be useful inside this prison, as you've already seen, or I could be useful in the free world again. November 16th, 2015, Gary, I walked out of a Texas prison. Now, I'm not a free man when I walk out, man. I've got a little more time left on parole in Texas. I'm on parole until the year 2073. So from the recording of this episode, I've got 50 more years on supervised release, but I haven't let that hold me back, Gary.
Meaning if you do any version of a slip up, it's a wrap.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a short leash on me. Every month I see my parole officer in Beaumont, Ms. Braggs. I pee the cup, I pay a fine, I answer their questions. If I want to leave Texas, I got to get permission from Texas. But Gary, look, man, I'm a coffee bean. The only way this coffee bean's going back to prison is when I go to prisons all over America. That's my passion, man. I go back into prisons a lot because I'm the guy that delivers hope. In fact, the inmates in America, they call me the smuggler of hope. I smuggle hope into a place that's hopeless, you know? The only way I go back into prison is when I go on my own terms and I walk out the front gate of all my prisons. But when I got out, Gary, I moved back to Southeast Texas. I lived with my parents for the first 2 years on parole, and I started sharing my story around the area of Southeast Texas. Then the big break happens. You got a couple more minutes, Gary? You're going to love this story.
And everybody who's listening is going to be so pissed at me. Everyone who's listening, just to remind you, I am not a professional podcaster some of your other favorites. I'm already 8 minutes late for a client who just texted me saying basically what the fuck. So I'm here even because I'm captivated by this. Brother, listen, everybody who's listening, it's not a super hard name to look up. Damon space WEST. If you've enjoyed this, there's a ton of content out there. I thought this would be a good conversation of perspective, gratitude, parenting, entitlement, accountability, and attachment to identification. I hope you took that out of it. Damon, we're cheering for you, brother. Keep building, keep coffee beaning it. And I hope we cross paths soon, bro.
Be a coffee bean, Gary.
Take care, my man.